Hello and welcome to episode 85 of the Card Hoarder Podcast, your weekly source for Magic Online news, community, and finance. Be sure to check out cardhoarder.com for buying and selling Magic Online singles, buying event tickets, or even just keeping track of your collection with the Card Keeper tool. All this with round-the-clock customer service, all on cardhoarder.com. My name is Connor. I'm the host and editor for the podcast. No Nathaniel this week, but joined as I am always by my co-host from Ireland, the Alpha, Dave C. Hello, Dave.
The Alpha? Jeez, that's some compliment. How are you, Connor?
I'm excellent, although Patrick Sullivan is not following me on Twitter. Feels bad, man.
I don't know what I must have said to get such an esteemed kind of follower, but you're making it. He was also like my 598th or something. I'm up to 600 followers on
Humble
Twitter.
Brags. Jeez, nice.
Big time in it. Big time. Only took me 2 years, but big time in it.
Yeah, another thing I wanted to say too is, man, is it super cold here in Chicago. I hate to start the show off with a weather complaint, but man, it's been single digits for like the past week and it continues to be so. Winter is here and it's not leaving.
Yeah, it's pretty cold over here as well, actually.
But yeah, man. Otherwise, New Year's upon us. I had a good New Year. How about you?
Yeah, just relaxed. Stayed in with Callie. Had a pretty old person New Year. Watched the countdown. She went to bed almost instantly afterwards.
Yeah, pretty much the same. We're getting old, man.
Yeah, it's just, New Year's is always the worst to be out for. I don't mind people going out for Christmas, but being out like in clubs or in bars for New Year's is always the most disappointing experience.
Yep. More on that in our After Dark segment. I don't want to spoil anything, but yep, New Year's upon us. I'm excited because I have a lot of different projects in the pipeline for 2018, so I can't wait for some of those. And there's, you know, plenty of things to look forward to in the Magic world as well. I know on our past episode, we gave Magic kind of a mediocre grade for 2017, so things can only go up, right? I mean, it has to.
I guess I'd rather all years be mediocre than have some years be awful. But yeah, there's a lot of potential for this year, I think.
And later on in the show, we'll share like what we're looking forward to most in 2018. But first, let's talk about some Magic Online news, since there really isn't that much, and we'll even have some time to talk a little Rivals of Ixalan spoilers, so that will be fun. So let's start with the biggest piece of news to happen since last time we talked. Arguably the biggest storyline in Magic as well. Kenji Numont the Nummy, one of the top streamers in the game, qualifies for his first Pro Tour by winning a Mox Open. So, and the format was Ixalan Sealed, and then Top 8, of course, was Draft. Takeaways from this, unfortunately, it was not recorded, or he did not stream it either. I'm sure he probably won it because he didn't stream it, but regardless, this has always been a big storyline. I think people are just more happy for him that he finally got there. And watching the stream, he didn't really go into detail, but you could just tell he's just relieved. I mean, you can probably feel some of his pain, right?
Yeah, I certainly haven't had as many misses as he has. But unfortunately, if you miss as many times as someone like him, or even as many times as someone like me has, when you get there, it isn't all it's cracked up to be, because you just feel this massive weight off your shoulders, opposed to just elation. Like, if you see people who make it on, you know, their first couple of years of trying, they're just out of their mind happy that they get this. People like Newmont or me are more like, you know, wipe your brow off. Whew, geez, that was almost another loss, you know? That was a close one again. I can't believe I almost didn't make the Pro Tour again. But I'm a bit of a pessimistic person, so that's where that comes from as well. But he's had some of the, I think the amount of misses he has are slightly overstated, because I know other people who miss, for example, someone like Jabberwocky on Magic Online for like a year was in like every PTQ top 8 I've ever seen, you know. So there are people that miss more than him, but I don't think there's anyone in the public eye that has missed more than
right.
Newmont. So I'm very happy that he made it.
Right, same. He shows his emotion a lot of times when he streams, at least like when he has misses, and like he's usually streamed his PTQs. And I know when he was streaming, he was showing a lot of disappointment. Oh, I'm not getting any trophies. Ugh, whatever. And then he tweeted like 2 hours later, like, yeah, of course, when I'm not streaming, I easy 3-0 immediately. So I bet that had something to do with him not streaming the whole tournament. I mean, the obvious thing too is these tournaments are, he said like 12 hours the whole thing was. I mean, I can't imagine streaming for that long. And those things have a lot of dead air in them too. So probably the right way to go.
I streamed the mocks that I top 8'd once. And that was tough, man. I streamed the PTQ that I top 8'd as well. And you're just there for so long. Now, it can be worth it viewers-wise, but I'm a small stream. Like, I cap at maybe 300 maximum. No one else is on. I've had a good day. I'm playing a format everyone likes. 300 maximum is kind of my limit. And I get sniped all the time. Well, all the time is an over-exaggeration, but I've definitely got sniped on stream. And this isn't just feelings. I've been told by people that they snipe me. You know, there's Semulin, who's another fantastic limited streamer, got sniped in, or ghosted, as they said, in the top 8 of a PTQ. I want to say PTQ final, maybe even, but there's high risk. And in general, I don't go on about ghosting because I don't care. A viewer's a viewer. I'm not exactly streaming to win all my games. I'm streaming to get people to watch and have fun with me. But if you're going to be putting so much money forward to play these online PTQs, you should probably not stream them, unfortunately.
Well, when you stream, did you have a delay? And do you know some of these other people? I know, like, MJ and Numot, they always have, like, a 10-minute delay, and they'll hide their hand as well. Is that just not enough?
I started putting a delay in when I got to the top 8. I didn't delay before that. That might be me just underestimating how known my stream is, or, you know, how much people do this. At the time, for both of them, I didn't think people ghosted as much as people thought. And now, after doing this for about 2 years now, I think that people do it way, way more than I think. So, this is a change. Hand hider can help, but then if you're hiding your hand, what's the point in streaming it in the first place? Would be my opinion. Because
it's just to see your reactions and how the gameplay maps out. Because I know a lot of the community would love to see Numot's face after he won.
Yeah, my advice for that kind of stuff, and, you know, I'm trying to get my YouTube channel back up and running, is that record it. It's a lot easier to record, and you're under less pressure to talk to people and worry about your hand hider. And it already takes so much of your cognitive focus, and some people aren't good at it. LSP is very good at it because he's very good at multitasking with his mind. But so you're not good at thinking of what to say about the situation and thinking about it. So if you're hiding your hand, you also have to think about what to say about the board position without giving away what's in your hand. So you're essentially becoming a commentator to your own game while thinking of lines. Where if you just record it, you can just say what you're thinking, not have to worry about anything. So I would recommend any content makers out there, if they want PTQs or stuff like that, maybe think of playing the first few rounds without anything. And if it looks like it's going well, record your second half of the PTQ in the top 8. That's what I would do.
Yeah, man, but that's karma. As soon as you start recording, you're going to lose, though, of course.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, ultimately, I wish there was coverage of some of these events, just like top 8 coverage, but I know we're nowhere near that point, and maybe Arenas, maybe we have something like that, because it would be really cool to see some of these events, because, yeah, it almost feels kind of wasted, this Kenji storyline. I mean, not that it's just, like, diminished in any way, but we don't get that final hooray on camera or anything like that. So it felt like the payoff could have been better, but either way, we're really happy for Kenji, and hopefully he does well at the Pro Tour. I think that's the other. It's not just the Pro Tour, too. He's qualified for the MOX Championships, and that's for next year. So
winning an Open is massive money as well.
Massive.
It's so much better than winning a PTQ. So, yeah, he's had to wait a long time, but he got what essentially is a double PTQ, and the opportunity in the MOX is way, like, a MOX is way better EV than a PT. Like, easily. Definitely. 20 times the EV that a PT is. Yep. So it's like winning one PT invite and one super PT invite almost.
Good EV for Magic as well. This is the guy to feature. Easy. Some good stuff. I also wanted to comment a little bit about Vintage Cube. Now, I know Vintage Cube is just like, it's a thing that we have every year. But for some reason, it's this thing that we come back to, and it's like beloved by the community as a whole. I'd never really hear anybody like speak poorly of it. I mean, I'm not a huge cube fan, but like I'll play this cube. I'll watch people play this cube. Now, maybe just because Magic is at a lull during December, but it just surprises me how much like Magic needs this to kind of hold us over and how well it's done consistently over the past few years. Cause I mean, like it's basically the same cube over the past few years, like barring like a few cards that get swapped in and out. What do you feel about the Vintage Cube? Do you like it as much as I do?
I'd probably be at a similar level, maybe a bit lower than you. I'm just not a big cube guy. It's like fun and I'll play it a bit, but I have a real competitive edge, and if I don't feel like I'm learning that much from something, so I like playing formats that currently exist, even over past formats, because I feel like the better I get at that, the more, if I play a PTQ, I'm more advantaged. So even when I'm having fun, if I'm playing, like, the best mixture for me is Error, where I'm both having a lot of fun and learning, so my PTQs have better odds. So I always have that kind of inborn competitiveness there. But yeah, the Vintage Cube's a lot of fun. And conveniently, well, not conveniently, because it's meant to be, it comes in at a time where there's not much else to do. So it's fantastic because otherwise I just wouldn't play Magic Online. It's just dead air. All the formats technically are in turmoil because there's a new set, and while it's very unlikely to affect Vintage or Legacy or Modern, it still feels like you're testing an incomplete format until this whole new set is previewed. Now, luckily, there's not as much of a delay because Rivals will be out pretty soon. We checked the date before the cast to make sure, and it's sooner than I thought anyway. Yeah, it just gives me something fun and kind of careless to do. It's the like least competitive I get in Magic. I just try and draft janky combo decks. I don't like streaming it that much, though. I feel like it's streamed a lot, and I feel like I get a bit of an extra edge at this time of year by streaming Legacy or Modern, because everyone is on Cube. And the problem is, if everyone's on Cube, the only thing that differentiates me between Gabe Nassif is that Gabe Nassif is a Hall of Famer multiple time, you know.
Right, that makes sense. So, yeah, and that's, I think, the other best thing about this. I mean, we used to have Paul Cheon stream a ton of Cube. He was known for his stipulation drafts as well. So Caleb has gotten on that train now. But we also, every year, you know, the greatest player, arguably the best player ever, John Finkel, he always streams Cube. He did it a lot less. I think he usually does it like on Christmas or Christmas Eve or one of those days. Yeah. He did it on New Year's Day this time.
Yeah,
but exactly. It was only one day he does it. So, but that's like kind of like the magic of this Cube, though. Everybody comes back. They draft their favorite decks. You know, John Finkel always drafts Storm, which is hilarious that he just forces it every time, pretty much. And he's, he like always gets there, and he always gets like the best Storm deck possible. I love it. Again, I didn't start playing Cube until maybe 2013, 2014. And even then, I still didn't like it that much until I'm starting to like it a little bit more. Just because it's online, I think. Just I can play it cheap. I can play it with, like, just... So we thought it wasn't going to be as a great experience because we're in leagues and we're playing cross-pods. So we thought maybe it wouldn't be as fun. But, it's even more fun, I think, just because you can play faster and you can play tons of matches right away. So it's just been an amazing experience that you can't get anywhere else but Magic Online. So just thought we'd bring that up, and I love it every time they bring it back, and I don't think Wizards will ever shy away from bringing this is like the one tradition that they like have been sticking to. This is like a good constant for Magic Online that I really love. So
yeah, I agree.
Can't wait to play some more drafts, and I'm looking forward to it coming back next year. Of course, there's other cubes, but this one always has the appeal of opening power, so I always love that. So last thing I wanted to talk about in accordance to Magic Online, I thought this was really interesting that Lee Sharp tweeted a poll, and the question was, if we brought Chaos Drafts to Magic Online, is it important that a given pack only have cards from a single set? So the majority of the vote was for keep each pack to one set, so not a huge surprise for the poll. What I thought was more of a surprise was that Lee was just asking the question in the first place. Because usually the order usually goes, the community, it begs for Chaos Drafts online. And then the Magic Online team responds with, it's not going to happen. We can't do that. So I don't know if something has changed for them to consider Chaos Drafts, but this would be another excellent play experience that would be exclusive to, well, it's not exclusive to Magic Online, but it's much easier to do it because packs are so expensive in paper.
It's absolutely insane that this isn't currently a thing.
I don't think it's insane, but yeah, yes, it's something that they should probably have been looking into, yes.
Essentially, it's a known moneymaker. It does well at GPs. People would definitely play it. The reason it's not there is because it's hard to program. Like, they've basically said this before, that the way it's configured, it's not easy to program this in. And maybe they've been working, I don't want to be too critical, maybe they've just been working on it for 2 years, right? And it's not...
Right.
They could definitely... I don't know what manpower is allocated where. I can't comment on that. But this is something that's certainly just going to do really well. I do not like Chaos Drafts at all. But I know people at GPs love them. And the last couple of GPs I have been to, the Chaos Drafts have just sold out. I think this is fantastic. And you've seen on Treasure Chests, people just love gambling. Like, we've talked about the loot crate kind of controversy in other games. But chests are like that. People just love gambling and seeing if they hit it big, and you know, there's a good downside to them. Like, you never feel too bad because there's always cards in it that, you know, are part of your game. And there's that element with Chaos Draft. Oh, will I get that one expensive booster? Please, 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 please let there be something really good in that one expensive booster, you know? And that's really cool.
You're talking from a, you know, opening sweet cards, but even if it was Phantom, I would still love playing it. Just because it gives you a different experience every time. Even just the excitement of opening a new pack or a pack that you have no idea what it's going to be, even that has just a ton of appeal instead of just opening money. Because I don't know. At this point, opening money to me, it doesn't scratch my itch anymore. I don't know what it is.
Yeah, I think it's certainly both that drive people to play stuff like this. So why I don't like Chaos Draft is because I think the upside is great. The upside is exactly what you explained. Packs you haven't seen for years, cards you haven't seen for years. Getting to draft a sweet deck that does all these different things and, different cards across different sets working together in perfect unison. Except when I play Chaos Draft and then I open the Mirrodin set with no cards in my color at all, affinity for artifact, a million cards, I have no other artifacts. And I get, a set with Echo and, Echo cards just aren't that playable anymore. And I just end up with this junk three color monstrosity where none of the cards work together. Hey, that's a nice Mirror Enforcer. You have a lot of artifacts in there? Nope. Just one. It's the Mirror Enforcer. So that's my experience with Chaos Draft, and I hate that downside. It's actually kind of the reason I hate Ixalan, because I hate train wrecking a draft when you know you've drafted well and there's nothing you can do. I don't think there's any worse feeling in Limited Magic.
Sure, sure. Dude, I don't want to talk about Ixalan anymore. That's going to be one of my things I want to see from 2018. No more talk of Ixalan. Just done with it.
Just pretend it didn't happen.
Just pretend it did happen. So back to Chaos Drafts. Yeah, I understand that completely. I feel kind of the same way. I think the big problem is, too, I've only done two Chaos Drafts in my whole life. So maybe it's just I haven't had a better experience because it's just a different way of drafting. So you might just have to be used to it. It's kind of like in Overwatch. The main modes, you choose your character, but there is a random gameplay mode.
Yeah.
And it's just a different way to play the game. And it's just certain characters are so overpowered that you have to target them when you're on the opposing side. And when you're them, you have to be careful to stay alive. So it's a different way to play the game that I love, that I wish Magic kind of implemented more. Some kind of random feature. And this is kind of where why Chaos Draft kind of scratches that itch for me.
To interrupt a bit on that.
No, go ahead.
A game very similar to that, League of Legends, has a similar mode that's super popular that they bring back once a year, which is called URF. I think you say URF or whatever, but I don't know. I'm not that big into it. But you get a random champion, and you get a certain amount of rerolls who use something for rerolls. So it's funny because people don't know how to play every champion they've ever purchased. Some people purchase a champion, play it a couple times, and don't like it. That's certainly what happens to me a lot. And all your moves now have super reduced cooldown, so they're all 80% cooldown now. It's just people spamming moves and in random characters, and it's just complete nonsense and lots of fun.
Yeah, I would love that. Same thing. I don't know why Street Fighter doesn't have a mode like that where you have to be a random character too. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just something interesting I saw because I never see any of the WotC staff even bringing this as an option. So something to look out for in 2018 for sure. So we will just have to wait and see. So next, let's talk a little bit about Rivals of Ixalan. It's coming out in a few weeks, as you said. Spoilers are coming out pretty quick now. So by the time this cast comes out, there's probably going to be a bunch of cards that have been spoiled.
A million more.
Yeah. So let's start off the top. We have a new mechanic, Ascend. What do you think about Ascend?
So I think Ascend, to be a super spike about it, might have real controversial tournament moments.
Ooh, yeah.
So what Ascend says is if you have 10 permanents, you get the City Blessing. And then all of its effects are, when you gain the City Blessing, you can't lose it. It's just it's an emblem, a token. We haven't seen anything to interact with it. Maybe it'll print a card as I'm speaking, the preview a card that interacts with it. But you just have it permanently once you have 10 permanents in play. And you've had a card with Ascend in play, or something that says when you play it, you ascend. And you get extra effects. So a good example is Tender Shoot Dryad, who is a 5-mana 2/2 with Ascend. So it's just a creature in play, and when you reach 10 permanents, bam, you got the City's Blessing, you get that token. At the beginning of each upkeep, create a 1/1 green sapling token. Saplings you control get +2/+2 as long as you have the City's Blessing. So it's a static effect. It doesn't go on stack. You don't hit 10 permanents and then it goes on stack that you have the City's Blessing. It just happens. It's a static effect, which makes it really weird to remember. And it means stupid stuff like that can happen. If you don't need to announce when it happens, we'll see. This is going to be cleared up by the FAQ when the whole set comes out. But this could lead to interesting stuff where it's I'll shock your sapling. I have 10 permanents in play. I have the City's Blessing. Well, you didn't say you had the City's Blessing. Well, I don't need to. It's an invisible thing. Like emblems. Right. I don't need to have an emblem in play. It's just good courtesy. Well, you had to tell me. No, I had to remind you when it's relevant. And it's relevant now because you shocked my tree. Mm. That's a terrible tournament experience. In general, I've said it on the cast before, I'm super anti-invisible triggers. I just announce 90% of what I'm doing. But you're not obligated to announce triggers that don't affect the board in Magic. So I think it's really counterintuitive to the whole message of be open and communicate with your opponent all the time when there's just a rule saying you don't have to announce all your triggers. And this is another thing that resembles invisible triggers. Hopefully they clear it up in the FAQ and they say, listen, when you ascend, you have to have the emblem in play. We're not allowing people not to, and you have to say, I've ascended or something.
Yeah, one upside in this is I wonder how playable a lot of these Ascend cards will be, because getting to 10 permanents is actually not as easy as it looks. At least on the surface, that's the way I think about it. I mean, there's usually one playable card with the new mechanics, so it's definitely going to come up, I understand. Obviously with Limited as well.
I think the Tender Shoot might see some play. I was probably going to do an article about this, about the Tender Shoot Dryad himself. But so yeah, this card with Anointed Procession is interesting. Because you go Anointed Procession, then turn 5, you know, he's vulnerable. Being a 2-2, he can just be shocked out of the game. But you play this guy on turn 5, you have a Procession, 5 lands already in play. That's 6 permanents. This guy is 7. He makes 2, you're already up to 9. And that's if nothing else is currently in play. So he might just turn into a 5-5 that makes 2 tree-trees. Now, he has to survive. If he gets shocked later, your saplings turn back into 1-1s. But if you're running 4 of them and, you know, 4 processions and hidden stockpiles, it's pretty easy, I think, to make this guy into 5 mana, make 2-1-1s minimum, and get a removal spell out of their hand. So I'm keeping an eye on him. He's very fragile, and 5-drops are super competitive. There's a lot of really good 5-drops. That's, I've mentioned before, they've defaulted to 4 mana is too cheap to make a super powerful card. All the super powerful cards are 5 mana. There's so many cards over the last 2 years that if you took 1 mana off their cost...
Except Hostage Taker.
Except Hostage Taker, who could have easily been 5. Yeah, most of the cards you look at, if you take 1 off their cost, most of 5 drops, they'd be busted. They'd be, even if you took Power and Toughness off them, they'd be extremely busted magic cards. So that's the area they put it in, and he's certainly competing with a lot of things, but I think he could be good in Abzan tokens, where, you know, you're naturally going to have all of these permanents anyway.
Ascend with tokens is definitely the obvious home for this mechanic. So that's what I'm looking out for, the spoiler. How many more token cards? Because all the other sets, it's not too many tokens. Although, let's see, Treasure would count as permanents as well. So there's ways to get up to it. But yeah, you have to think about it in Limited too. I mean, you need either a combination of 6 lands and 4 creatures. Yeah, that... it can happen sometimes, but we're going to have to see how the speed of this format is. So a couple other big themes that I've seen was we have the 2-drop Lords, and these are going to be legal and standard, which, can you tell me a time when Anthem or Lord effects have been not 3 CMC? Because it's been like this for a while.
The last two is, I think, well, Mimic is kind of an Anthem. I think it's only Lord of Atlantis, right? Oh, no, Lorwyn. We had Wizen Sen. So that was a white for 2/2, all your Kitkin got +1/+1. But I think it's just that and Lord of Atlantis, and I can't remember the last time Lord of Atlantis saw... No, I think that was Lorwyn as well. I think Lord of Atlantis was in Lorwyn, not in the set, but in a core set next to it, briefly, because there
was... Yeah, I wanted to do research on this, but this just came up at like the last second to me when I saw these spoiled too. So I was like, I can't remember last time 2-drop Lords were legal and standard, so this could be a big deal. Because we've had the 3-drop Lords, and the 3-drop Lords have always just been, they're okay, they're like always like tier 2, sometimes tier 1.5, but they're never quite get there.
And same thing with Honor,
right?
Yeah.
But like, we haven't had Honor of the Pure, really. I'm talking about like the cheap Anthem effects. I mean, obviously, whatever the 5-drop Anthem in the Zombies deck was really good, obviously, but it had like an additional effect. But I'm just talking about things that were like vanilla things with like Anthem. That's it.
Yeah, Lord of the Cursed is like the last Lord we saw to do well. I noted to people, because we were talking about spoilers, a friend of mine noted to me that they don't make Lords at Rare anymore, really. Like, just vanilla, all your guys get +1/+1 is too boring for Rare nowadays, and we see this at Uncommon a lot. I also think that improves the draft experience, because...
Definitely, yes.
You have this, like, auto build around that's very obvious to build around for people. Now, this could also create a bad experience. I already don't like Merfolk a bit in the current draft format. Same. It's very strong, and this guy seems like he's going to be bonkers. But regardless, it's a policy shift. Over years now, even going back to Innistrad, you had Drog Skull Captain at Uncommon. Right. And recently, you had Lord of the Accursed at Uncommon. Because again, they create these cool draft experiences, just like this Merfolk and this Vampire Lord. Again, vanilla. And the new kind of Lords at Mythic and Rare have multiple effects. So you get, like, Cryptbreaker was, like, a Lord of sorts for zombies. Kind of. Like, they don't have Lord effects, but they have these strong synergies with zombies and don't do much without them. Just like, I'm going to get this name wrong. Kumana?
No clone, man. What does the card do?
Tyrant of all these names I can butcher, though. Arzaka? It's one green blue for 2/4 legendary merfolk shaman. Tap another on top merfolk you control. It can just be summoning sick because it's part of the ability. You don't have to tap this legend or the merfolk. There's no tap symbol involved. And this creature cannot be blocked until end of turn. Tap 3 merfolk you control, draw a card, or tap 5 merfolk you control to put a 1/1 counter on each merfolk you control. I think this card is busted. This card is busted wide open. It needed a little bit of support. It was the first of the new merfolk cards to be previewed. But, you know, I thought we weren't going to get a Lord because this is already kind of a Lord effect.
Yeah, and I mean, we also get Silvagero Adept, which is one of the more powerful merfolk cards of all time as well.
Yeah, especially when it comes to Standard. Like, the Adept doesn't shine in Modern. It's still necessary and never going to be cut in a Modern deck. But it does some, like, in Modern, you're going to die with a bunch of cards in hand, a bunch, you know? Or you're going to get a bunch of cards taught, seized away. In Standard, you know, you now go Kimono Speaker into Silvergill Adept, and they go, okay, blocker, you can't attack pass. You're like, okay, drop this guy, and I've drawn a card off the Silvergill Adept, and I'm going to draw a card off this. I'm just way ahead in cards. Now, if you don't kill my legend, I can play 2 more merfolk on turn 4, and they all get +1/+1. All of a sudden, they're not easy to block. Hey, I can't attack next turn. Did you kill the legend? Nope. Okay, they all get +1/+1 again. If I can't attack now, I don't know what what size creature my opponent has, but it must be pretty big. And then worst comes to worst, this guy gets a couple counters with his ability, and then he sneaks through for 4, 5, 6 damage, you know? Yeah, I think very powerful creatures so far for that color combination. We need more powerful spells, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, well, what other cards really interest you? I guess I'll start off one that caught my eye, not for its constructed playability, but just I just like the design. The Awakened Amalgam, I don't know if you've seen this one. It's the 4 mana artifact creature, Star-Star, and its power toughness are equal to the number of differently named lands you control. So, card's obviously really bad, but it's just really cool that, like, there's still design space to be explored in Magic. I just love that. Even after 25 years of printed cards, there's still something different that we can check out.
Yeah, I think this card's really cool. It's a shame of Braid's around and it's probably never going to see play because of that.
I mean, you need 4 different lands to make it a 4 mana 4/4. I mean, yeah, that's pretty bad.
You'd be surprised. You'd be surprised in Team of Colors. Yeah, he probably doesn't have the power level to ever see play, but he is a cool card. It's definitely what I thought when I first saw him.
Yeah, it's kind of weird that it's a rare, too. This could easily be an uncommon, so...
I think it's rare because of complexity opposed to power. I think they're like, oh, there's so many words on it. It's a rare.
True. I just can see this being very late picks in draft a bunch of times, so... Yeah. Unless there's going to be a 5-color deck or something like that, because that's where, obviously, this card will come in, or some kind of 3 or 4-color deck, but we'll see how this format shapes up. I don't have my hopes up yet, but we will see.
In Modern, you can play them with snow-covered. You can play them with snow-covered lands in Modern.
Ooh, now we're breaking it. I like it. So what cards interest you? Any card particularly sticks out for you?
Yeah, so this is a card I really like that I think might fly under people's radars, but I was a big fan of Mono-White Vampires after the Pro Tour. I brought it to a GP, but felt it was just edged out by the mid-range decks once they figured out what you were doing and played correctly around certain things. And I think it needed a couple more cards. Now, for those of you who haven't seen it, it has a bunch of white creatures, including a bunch of vampires, and it has Okatra's Monument to just, like, reduce the cost of everything, card advantage, you know, get a bunch of 1/1s out and then have an anthem effect out to finish them off. So I've been keeping my eye out for some white vampires to fill slots, and the 2-drop slot was one that I found was lacking a lot in this deck. Maybe not anymore, though. We got Starving Paladin, which is 1 white for a 3/3 vampire knight. Starving Vampire doesn't untap during your untap step. Whenever you gain life, untap Starving Vampire. So it doesn't have lifelink itself, but there are a very large amount of lifelink and gain life creatures in the vampire deck. It tends to just make a bunch of 1/1 tokens that have lifelink, and you can easily sacrifice them to untap this 3/3. On top of that, it's just a creature that trades really well on turn 2 and can't be attack passed. So stuff like the mono red deck are going to struggle to attack past this. This card doesn't get Kenred. And in that matchup, you can essentially end up giving it Vigilance. So 3/3 Vigilance on turn 2, if the curve plays out right, is pretty hard for Mono Red to deal with. And they're going to need the Lightning Strike that straight away. But if they're Lightning Striking your player or abrading it on turn 2, they don't pressure you. And then you have lots of time to get your Monument out and get that engine going. So decent beater, blocks well. If your curves are right, essentially has vigilance. I think this is an above curve creature. It's going to take a while to find a proper home because it doesn't slot into anything immediately at the moment, but I think it's going to be powerful.
Yeah, definitely. I love your example of mono red. That's always in consideration. You want early plays, especially ones that can block well. So this definitely can be an all-star. Although, depending on how well these Mindrage and Energy decks turn out to be. So
that has bummed me out a lot about this preview season. I could talk about 5-6 more cards. I'm actually really excited for this set and everything they've previewed so far. Mightn't be good, but I see so much potential in so many of these cards. Till I realize if any of them is good enough, Energy can just play it. I think that's why I'm getting so excited for the Merfolk Synergy, because that could be a deck that challenges Energy in combat. You know, doesn't care about the Long Tusk Club because it can unsummon it, or the creatures can get big enough, or it can block well, or, you know, it can outcard advantage with the legend and, you know, maybe punishes the deck for not playing too much removal and stuff like that. But realistically, what's probably going to happen is it's going to take one or two tournaments. Energy's going to adapt, play all the new cards from the set that it needs to, and that's that. I think the perfect example of that is Jadelight Ranger is meant for a Merfolk deck, but maybe it just ends up being better than Rogue Refiner, and Energy gets an upgrade to Rogue Refiner. I don't know. I'd have to run the magic mats on it a bit, but it's a one.
Yep.
It's 3 mana, 1 green for 2/1. And when it comes into play, explore twice. It's a Merfolk. Mm-hmm. So super powerful, but very similar to Rogue Refiner. Either you're getting a 4/3 and hitting 2 spells. And if you hit the spell the first time, you can keep it on top, hit it a second time, and then choose to put it in the graveyard or not. Or you're drawing 2 lands. Now, 3 mana 2/1 that draws 2 lands is stupid good. Like, is absurdly excellent. But it's only going to be that a tiny percentage of the time. Is a 3 mana 3/2 that draws a land and scries one, essentially, is that better than Rogue Refiner's draws a card, random card, and gives you 2 energy?
Yeah, I mean, it's better just because it, you know, 2 explores, but...
two, also putting a joke of a random old cheater in a magic card is kind of weird.
Man, it has to be... They had to do that on purpose, but... Anyways, there is a downside. Double green, I would say, is a downside. So
certainly Rogue Refiner
has...
Yeah.
I would say it maybe has a slight step. So, I don't know. We'll see how Energy does in the rest of the time it's in standard. But all these sets are going to rotate out eventually. So, these cards will shine at some point. Oh, unless 100%. Whatever the fall set is. If that's super busted, then oh well. Sorry, Ixalan, you know. One last card I wanted to talk about. Again, this card has no way it's constructed playable at all. This is more for my commander itch. Card is called the Immortal Sun, so it's the 6-mana legendary artifact, and has a bunch of just tons of abilities. So players can't activate planeswalker loyalty abilities. At the beginning of your draw step, draw an additional card. Spells you cast cost 1 less to cast, and creatures you control get +1/+1. So it just does everything. And the reason I say it doesn't, probably not going to play in constructed, I mean, these effects typically don't get played in constructed. I can't remember if Staff of Nin was played that much. But, I mean, Staff of Nin's probably a better constructed card than this card just because the deal 1 damage was at least somewhat of a finisher in control decks at that time. So, and this card just does nothing.
I want to say Staff of Nin saw one-off play in Jund for a little while near the end of its, like,
yeah,
dominance.
Yeah, that sounds like something it did. Or, like, some kind of blue-black control deck, I thought, like, got played, like, fringely. This was never a tier 1 deck or anything.
No,
but
the only card a bit like one of them that I ever saw play that I can think of is Staff of Dominance. But that was when mm-hmm. Tron was in standard. So you just had, like, 9 mana and you had all this. And then you had, so this was a perfect mana sink that you just win the game by itself. This is obviously not that. I would recommend if you get a foil one hanging on to it, it's probably going to be big money in EDH down the line.
Yeah, that's what I'm doing. Sorry, foil staffing in, but you're probably going to get downgraded. I'm sorry. Because the one damaging commander, it comes up rarely, but you want the spells to cast 1 less. You want that. The planeswalker ability is definitely relevant, although that hits your own planeswalker, so that's something to look out for.
This is more specific. This has to be, I none of these planeswalkers matter too much in my deck, or they're not integral to my strategy, but it is nice that you get to hose planeswalkers in a casual game.
Oh, yeah.
There's a tiny chance this ends up seeing some play. There isn't that great of an answer to this. Vraska's Contempt is a decent answer to Planeswalkers. But maybe we end up in a control deck where this is just a finisher. Like, okay, let's lock Planeswalkers out. I only have to kill creatures from now on. And if I only have to kill creatures, it's easy. Yeah. But it does get abraded, is the big issue.
Yeah, it just doesn't really do much as a control finisher. You want a big impact, like a Scarab God type of finisher, where it ends the game so quickly.
Yeah, I'm going to have to agree.
Stupid Scarab God and Hostage Taker, damn
it. Yeah, also, imagine getting a hostage taken. And you don't have the answer straight away. Yeah, that's the worst.
That sounds awful. But yeah, that's my card I'm most excited about, at least for casual. I can't wait to play that. So, Dave, hit me with another one. What are you excited for?
I'm going to cheat. I'm gonna take two because I'm so excited about this set so far. I'm going to cheat. Ooh. We got the Primal Storm. Itali, I think is how you pronounce its name. Itali the Primal Storm, which is 4 red for a 6/6 legendary Elder Dinosaur. Whenever Itali Primal Storm attacks, exile the top card of each player's library. Then you may cast any number of non-land cards exiled this way without paying their mana cost. So what this set has brought is a couple of the Elder Dragons are kind of spicy reanimation targets. So Godfarrow's Gift at the moment is blue-white and it's playing Angel because you can also cast Angel of Invention. And it's the best thing to reanimate because it becomes a chroma essentially. But with this card, maybe, you know, this becomes a 4/4 hasty creature on turn 4 that gets 2 cards. Maybe that's good enough. The other card that, in a similar vein, the other Elder Dragon, the white one, Setelpa, stupid names, Primal Dawn, is 6 white for 4/8. This is basically a Hearthstone card. Flying, Double Strike, Vigilance, Trample, Indestructible. But this is quite spicy to reanimate with a God Pharaoh's Gift because it doesn't lose any of its power.
Right.
And there's not that many, like, there's no Grasp of Darkness in the format. There's only like Veraska's Contempt and Bounce spells to deal with this. So then it becomes a 4/4 flying double strike, haste, vigilance, trample, indestructible. So that finishes games real fast. And neither of these are going to replace the angel itself. But they could end up as like two of. Like I found the deck shorter creatures sometimes. And maybe you just want one or two like real high-end things to play. I think I like the Primal Dawn more than the red one. Because you can cast an 8 mana, almost impossible in this deck, but you do run a few, you know, Search for a Skanta, which pumps you up 1 mana, and maybe it's just in your hand, and you're like, okay, plan B, they have their artifact removal, we grind out the game till turn 8, bam, just drop the dinosaur. Also, it kind of, if you look at the art, looks like he's saying, surprise, bitches. Just okay. A little bit, like he's just popping out of nowhere, bam, gotcha, which is awesome.
Hmm.
Oh, I forgot about. One more card. I'm like sure. A kid in the candy shop here. I forgot about one more card because I think people are kind of underestimating it a bit, but it does need a bit more backup. Is Elenda the Dusk Rose? Again, I've butchered the name. Definitely 2 white-black for 1/1. She's a legendary vampire knight. Lifelink. Whenever another creature dies, so either player's creature, put a 1/1 counter on this creature. When she dies, put X-1/1 white vampire creature tokens with lifelink where X is her power. Now, she's a bit unique because usually these cards say stuff like, you know, equal to the amount of counters on her. So then her downside would be if she dies straight away, that you get nothing. But very minimum, she's a 2/1. She's a 4 mana 2/1, very minimum. Now, obviously you don't want that. You don't want this to get Harness Lightning with 0 counters on it and then only make 1/1/1. But, you know, all we need is a bit of synergy. 1 sacrifice outlet with her, a couple of just attacks that throw away creatures to make this creature grow. And there's Veraska's Contempt in the format, but there isn't that many cards that just exile cards. It's Hostage Taker and Veraska's Contempt would be like the good answer to this creature. But if you have a sacrifice outlet, if we get like a Nantoku Husk ability.
Yeah, Cartel Aristocrat of some sort, yeah.
Yeah, the Cartel Aristocrat would be perfect. Then we're looking at some kind of, we have the Monument, we have her, we have a sacrifice outlet. All of a sudden, we're looking at like a black-white Aristocrats deck that sounds like it could put up some numbers against energy.
Yeah, I hope so. Is it any creature? It doesn't say non-token?
Yeah, another creature dies. So
okay.
Obviously, we have the... My favorite card in Standard at the moment is the one-drop Legion's Landing.
Yep.
You know, we have Maverin Vane at 3 mana. If we get a sacrifice like that, I think the black-white Aristocrat Vampire deck looks very, very good.
Yeah, I hope so. That card definitely caught my eye. It being 4 mana is... it seems like it needs a lot of setup cost, so I was like, I mean, it's like,
one of those things where if she's 3, she's probably too good, right?
Yeah, I don't know. So I would have to play with it more, but it seems a little bit overcosted. It seemed like they were being a little bit too safe with this card.
Could have been, yeah, could be.
So, but definitely cool design. I definitely agree. I'm excited about some of these cards. I mean, yeah, we're always excited when we see new stuff. So, and Wizards always does a great job of designing new cards. As I said, I thought Awakened Amalgam, it's a really bad card, but man, I love the design. I love seeing what Wizards can come up with. It's always different stuff. Good job, Wizards.
Yeah, I felt like this for the last couple sets. Even the sets I've ended up not liking in the end, stuff is cool. Like, they're, as much as Aether of Vault and Kaladesh were a mess up standard-wise, I was certainly very excited as the cards got previewed.
And yeah, and even Ixalan too. I mean, it gets a bad rap because we don't like the draft format, but a lot of the designs in the set, like, I love still. It's just a shame because it gets overshadowed too much, so we don't get to appreciate it as much.
Yeah, completely agree with that. Like, I just, there's still really cool cards for me, even though the set is bad. And I think it's overall, it's not just cool design. The cards feel cool because of the environment they're in. So, like, the Big Elder Dinosaur, yeah, I used to be a bit more in the camp of it didn't matter if the card just had blank space and it said filler above the art. But I'm getting more and more into, like, the themes of these sets are so cool, the art is so fantastic, that I'm getting into that a bit more. I'm becoming a bit more of a filthy casual, but... you know, but
we're gonna play some Commander one day, Dave. That's my goal in life, or that's my goal for 2018.
I love building Commander decks, but I cannot stand playing games of Commander. One-on-one Commander has actually suited me better because I like just being in and out of those games in half an hour.
Yeah, that's the one downside of multiplayer games. Those can take forever sometimes. But well,
I don't mind if you're in a play group that isn't fair. So if someone's like, I combo off on turn 5 and no one stopped me, I'm like, okay, that's cool. Maybe we can play one more. I don't mind that. But when someone's like, no, no combos.
I'm one of those people. Shuffling the deck is the worst. I hate shuffling again. People are like, oh, we'll just play another game. Like, you didn't really play. You shuffled for like 5 minutes and then you played a couple of lands. Like, that's not a game. Come on.
Yeah, that's fair. I do get why people hate it. But the thing I hate more than that is people going, okay, let's have a fair game. Let's all play our blue-white decks with a million Rot of God effects. And not end the game until tomorrow.
I understand both sides. Yes, I agree. But I'm definitely on the camp. I'm like, come on. Don't play all these like infinite combos. Or I just hate decks that are like just combos. Like, if you have like one combo that you like kind of get into with no tutors, like, okay, whatever. But if you're tutoring like every turn to get your combos, just like, come on. like we can all be doing this, but whatever. Like I said, that's my goal of 2018 to get you into that. So that will transition us into goals or things we want to see in Magic in 2018, because we talked about or we reviewed all the things that we saw in 2017 and we weren't too high in it. So let's go over what we think we want to see in 2018, what will make Magic successful. So Dave, take us off. What do you really want to see from Magic in 2018? Is there like, are you particularly hyped for like a set, or is it just like you want to see something Wizards do better?
So, two main things here on the real life and digital spectrums. I want to see Magic Arena go to open beta. I know it's probably really unlikely to happen this year, but I think that's when they had it originally slotted in near the end of this year. I don't want to rush it. Like, they should definitely take their time on this product, and I'm not a person, if they have to push it back, I'm not going to get mad. But I would love to be able to stream the open beta. As I've said, I'm all about trying to get on this Magic Arena train, trying to get people to watch it like they watch Hearthstone, you know, that's super important. So excited for that, and hopefully they get out this year and that progresses nicely. From the real life spectrum, I'm really nervous about Channel Fireball having a monopoly in GPs. Mm-hmm. And there's already some signs with stuff that's happened show they're not off to a strong start. And there's a couple things that I thought were definitely going to happen. I was like, if someone would have bet me money that certain things would have happened by this stage, Channel Fireball, like group deals, like come to 10 of our GPs, or, you know, the way you buy season tickets for basketball, you buy like a book of them, you can just give them away to your friends and stuff. 100% I thought that was going to be a thing. Like, especially since a bunch of, you know, the people running Channel Fireball are just sports fans. I'm like, no way that's not going to be a thing by the start of next year. And there's no real sign of things like that yet. There's still a lot of time for it, but it's January. I thought they would have been doing a massive launch of like a new website to show off all the GPs in once instead of clicking on into a bunch of separate pages, you know?
So what are the other concerns that you've seen? Because I've heard like rumblings. Is it just like, is it just the high prices or what? Is there something else?
The same as last year, there's no incentive for the prices to ever go down. And last year had the worst numbers of GPs since 2013. And a constant thing I'm hearing is, hey, why should they lower their prices if people are still attending GPs? Well, they're not. We've had the worst GP numbers since 2013. And when you say that, they'll tell you, oh, more people play side events. Oh, people didn't show up because it was a bad standard. But that's a really typical Magic business. People do this all the time. Local stores do this a lot. You know, when stuff is going well, it's because Channel Fireball and GPs are great. When stuff isn't doing well, oh, damn R&D. How dare you make a bad Magic set? It's definitely the Magic set's fault. And sometimes it is. I don't want to say that's never the case. Stuff like Affinity and Cobblade, when cards need to be banned, that certainly does drive down attendance numbers. So that could definitely be a thing for last year. But it's very easy to blame that. And by the time, maybe this year's standard is great. But what if this year the numbers don't go up that much? And that means there's been 3 to 4 years now where people just aren't really happy with the price of GPs. And at what point has it been damaging to the competitive community? And that's what I'm really scared of. Because by the time you can correlate lower attendance numbers to the price of GPs, it might be too late to fix that problem. People like me are noisy. People who are going to be committed to the community for a long time and probably just suck it up and pay a lot for GPs, maybe go to a couple less than they would a year, but you'll still see me at a lot of GPs. You're going to hear me, you're going to dismiss me because I'm giving you money anyway. What happens to a semi kind of competitive person is they go to this GP and they're like, $80? Really? I have to pay for a plane ticket and a hotel, and it's $80, and the EV of a GP, even though it is a lot of fun, is really low. Like, imagine this person goes X5 and they feel great, they get a pro point. Like, how much money do I get? Oh, you weren't close to making money. It's just not a great experience. And that person, instead of complaining, instead of lodging a complaint, goes, well, I guess that's how Magic is. I'll go back to playing Hearthstone. Or I'll stay at home. I won't go to GPs. I'll stay playing in my local store.
So or Magic Online, yeah.
Or Magic Online. And that is something I'm scared of. I get that could only be a concern. And there's no way for me to prove these numbers. And that's why I'm scared. Because I want to be able to point at something that goes, this is definitely why there's lower attendance. But it's all guesswork. And it's all guesswork that we have to see correlation of over years, not over 1 year.
Yeah, it's definitely a valid fear, Dave. I mean, I haven't gone to a GP since 2015. And that's a huge part of it.
Yeah.
And that last GP was in Chicago. So I could say I haven't really traveled to a GP since maybe 2014. So it's even been longer. So,
and you're the perfect person I'm talking about, because you're not completely casual. You're not coming with a deck you made on your kitchen table. You know what competitive Magic is. You've played it before. You watch people play high-end Magic and you enjoy it. But you mightn't be like completely serious about winning the GP. You might just be coming for fun. I think you are
a little bit of both. Like, when I come to tournaments, I really want to do well, but it's not like completely backbreaking if I don't do like that well or whatever. So
exactly, you're the exact person I'm talking about. You're the exact person that's going to go, I went to a couple GPs. Geez, I can't really afford these anymore. I guess I won't go. I'm not going to voice my opinions too much about it. I'm not going to write them a letter. I'm not going to tweet them, because I'm just going to accept that's the price of their product, because I don't know if it can ever be better. Not every consumer is bothered with being super into the product and helping the product grow, because they don't think they have control over it. And a lot of the counter argument to this is like, oh, well, if they have a problem with a GP, why aren't they saying it? I mean, that's just not how consumers work in any product.
Right.
You know, you really have to work for information off your consumers. People pay companies to do surveys and do focus groups. Consumers don't willingly give up their time to give feedback to their products a lot of the time.
Yeah, maybe we should. I mean, this is the type of thing that some of the other projects I've been working on, a lot of big changes comes from consumers voicing their opinions very loudly. Some of that really needs to be, it needs to be said to the 10th degree to get this changed.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, and the other thing that's, I mean, for me too is, yeah, I would love to play, if I'm going to a GP, I want to play the main event. I'm not just going to go and play side events. Like, I don't know. Like, for me as a player, that doesn't appeal to me anymore. I've been to other tournaments where I've just played side events, but, you know, if I am going more than 1 hour, I'm going to play the main event. Like, it needs to be worth my time to go to these tournaments. And same thing with, like, yeah, I love seeing all my friends. I have a lot of friends in the Magic community, but just going just to hang out with people, I'm like, listen, I can stay at home and hang out with my friends at home and my wife. That's way better. I'm not saying they're, like, way better than my Magic friends, because I love my Magic friends. I wish I could get to see them way more often than I used to, so.
The internet's an amazing thing, though. You get to see those people. You kind of get to interact with those people every day now. You know, five, six years ago, if you don't see your friends, you don't talk to them forever. But I've seen you once in my life, Connor, and I talk to you every week. You're a good friend of mine. You know, we talk off of the podcast all the time. So it's so much easier to hang out with your friends in a virtual space that the appeal of a GP just being a place to meet friends, I think, is diminishing a bit. It's still fantastic. I still love meeting people that I'd never go see otherwise, and if they weren't Magic players at GPs. I really enjoy that. There's a bunch of English people that I know that I say hi to and I hang out with every time until I become Remo B, lose 5 rounds and put my hood up and sit in a corner. But until that point, I have a lot of fun talking to them. It's just, I still talk to them online now, you know?
Right. It's not, and maybe it's just because I'm getting like older, so that probably has something to do with it, but I'm definitely going to AGP this year, so I'm interested to see how my experience is. It's been a while since I've gotten to a big tournament like that, so... Oh, that's not going to be until November, so it's going to be a while, so never mind.
I hate to come down too hard on Channel Fireball, because I still hope a lot of this stuff is improved, but 3 other points, these are going to be quicker, that have happened in the last couple weeks. They tried to make trials for team GPs, which I thought was a real despicable money grab. And I'm sorry if anyone that was involved in this decision hears me calling them this, but that's definitely what it comes off as. You can't earn them with pro points. You have to pay to get them. That just feels like pay to win. And it's also disadvantaging people severely because you announced it 2 weeks before the GP. So a lot of people made the point, is like, I would have flown out and played one, but you made the announcement last second. So this is just a massive advantage to anyone that was lucky enough to have early flights. And also, yeah, it just feels like mega pay to win. Because the statistics and team GPs, especially good teams, if a pro gets these buys, forget about it. They're in the top eight. It's done. It's signed the slips already. It's such a low...
Lock it up.
Yeah, it's such a low variance. Like, the reason there's no buys... Well, one, because it's complicated because, you know, people are on teams with each other. People without buys can be on teams with people with buys, and you don't want piggyback kind of situations. But it's also such a low variance format. Like, giving a team 2 buys, especially if there's, like, a platinum team, giving them 3 buys is ridiculous. They're already at such an advantage by getting to play with 2 other platinums. So I think this left a bad taste in the majority of people's mouths. It also brought up the conversation again, you know, should there be buys at all? I do think there should be buys. We can talk about this maybe a different day. But
that was a good conversation. I'm glad to see some of the higher up pros voice their opinion. Like, yeah, I could do without buys. So I can't remember who did the poll. Maybe it was Finkel. Somebody did a poll, and there was actually a variety of different opinions. So
yeah,
I'm glad the discussion has kind of progressed a little bit with that.
It's definitely
that I think it's changed or anything, but yeah.
It's definitely something that can and should be discussed. I don't think anyone should get mad about discussing it. I'd be on the side that the buy system is fine, but I can get very deep into that a different day.
Yeah. That was going to be my next thought, that we should definitely have like a whole episode just dedicated to this, of just how to improve the tournament experience, or, you know, something along that line. Because I know other games, they struggle with this mightily as well.
Yeah, 100%. So that's a problem. But again, maybe it's not a money grab. Maybe someone just thought of it last second. But again, it was last second. That's really disorganized for someone that's going to take over every GP in the world. Like, their first GP is already so disorganized. Another thing that happened with that GP, artists were announced really late. I saw multiple complaints on Twitter that were like, we asked them who the artists were multiple times, and we just had to like keep asking Channel Fireball until eventually it came up.
I'm willing to give them a bone on that one. It's hard to do that. And some other tournaments, they do announce it very late. I mean, this was, what, a January GP or something like that? So maybe
it's the first one. It's like in a week. Is it this weekend or next weekend?
Yeah. So take that with what you will. I'm fine with that.
And on top of that, they hadn't announced the vendors. I don't know when they end up announcing them, but when this argument was happening, they still hadn't announced the vendors.
Sure.
And there's something...
Yeah, maybe it's just a holiday thing. I don't know.
It is, and it's tough, and I don't want to come down too hard because it is tough to run a GP, but you got to be a bit hard on them because they're going to run every GP this year.
Right. There's definitely accountability that needs to go both ways. So
exactly. And I don't want to nitpick
100% agree.
Over too much, but this, you know, no artists, no vendors to the last second. And the next one, I don't know if they fixed it yet, but the next one up until recently, we didn't know what the playmat was, though they expect you to pay for it. So the playmats now cost like $15 each if you want one. But they wouldn't tell you what it was. So people are signing up and they're like, well, I like playmats. I guess I'll try and buy one on the day if they have them for sale there.
Yeah, that's one of the first things you kind of announce. So,
well, yep. Especially if they're not free. If they're free, then I'm like, listen, you're getting it for free. Don't complain.
Whatever. Yeah.
But they want to pay. They're telling you to pre-book it, and they won't tell you what the product is.
Yeah, even then, that was one of our concerns was with marketing, and they can get really lax with marketing here. And that's a big marketing tool is, hey, here's our playmat. This is what our theme is going to be, or you know, whatever. That's what Star City used to do.
These are all small things, but these all speak to, and again, maybe it's the holiday. Maybe it'll improve next month, and I can shut up about this, and it'll all be fine. But these are all small organizational things. And it kind of feels, and a bit of feedback I'm getting from a couple judges, but you know, you don't know who to trust with what. And you know, we're all basically in a knitting circle. We all love nerd drama and gossiping a little bit. So I don't know what I'm getting, what is true or not. But they seem kind of disorganized. And that's that's worrying. Like disorganized, expensive, maybe, I don't know. You have to be a fly on the wall. But being a bit laxed because there's no competition to come take these GPs off them. So what happens if they're disorganized? They get a couple bad reviews. There's another, whatever, 30 GPs this year, some ridiculously high number.
Yeah, that's definitely a fear. And well, let's not harp on it too much longer because I want to get to some other things. But I am willing to give them some time.
Yeah.
Because doing this amount of work is daunting. And I'm hoping that the process becomes a little bit more streamlined. So these are definitely concerns. They are valid concerns from you, Dave. So I definitely agree with what you're bringing up here. So let's see how it is mid-2018, and then we can kind of reflect on how CFP is doing. There's a lot of other things, though, from 2018. Is there another one you want to fire off, or do you want me to share one?
I think just, do you want us to do personal ones or just overall MTG ones?
Yeah, either one, man.
I think personally for myself, I'll also put the harsh scrutiny on myself. You know, I'll make me discard a creature and scry one here. I think my content needs to improve a lot. I think, but this is mostly because of you. We do a really good job at podcasting. So the WCW podcast and the Card Harder podcast seem great, but that's mostly your work making me sound fantastic. But I have to do a lot better and I have to be a lot more consistent if I want to be doing this for a living. And I know it isn't good enough. And I want to say the same about my Magic play. Even though I've accomplished a lot Magic-wise, well, a lot by my standards, a lot more than I have in the past this year, it kind of felt to me like a broken clock is right twice a day, you know? Mm-hmm. You play enough, if you're playing at an okay level, you're going to get there. But to be honest, I think where I am at my playing ability is not half of where I want to be. And I need to be improving in that a lot. That's way tougher than being good at, I think, content. But we'll see. These are my goals. I want to be much better at Magic this year. I want to be much better at content making.
Those are solid goals. A few things that I want to see. I didn't really do any personal goals for myself. There probably could be infinite ones that I could share, but we do not have that much time. So I'm going to share a couple of things I want to see from Magic this year. Obviously, I want the Pro Tour formats to excel, so I'm hoping Modern doesn't get ruined from the Pro Tour. That's a huge one for me, because I know some of the Modern Pro Tours have been excellent, but some of them have been absolutely horrendous, and they've had terrible ramifications to the format after the Pro Tour as well. So I'm hoping we don't get that. I just want draft to be fun again. I just want better draft formats. And I don't think that's going to be a hard task coming off 2017, because we had some not stellar formats. Aether Revolt, Amonkhet were not great. Ixalan, I mean, really the only one good expert level set, or whatever you want to call it, draft set, was Our Devastation. I mean, that's not a good percentage of good draft formats. And this is usually where WotC excels at most. So I'm hoping it was just a down year, but that's really what I want to see from Magic, because I think that's really where the player base, it can really drop off if the draft formats are not interesting. And Dave, I have the same sentiments about Arena. I would love to see some improvements. I don't care about what speed it is. The big thing again with me is music, sound effects. I'm fine with not showing me anything finished product right now. I'm hoping it's being worked on. That's all I'm hoping right now. Please, please have something by the end of the year. Either just one music theme or some improved sound effects, because I think that's really what is, it's another important step for Magic, for it to grow as a game and for Arena as like a single game to be a successful game. So huge, huge thing I do not want to overlook.
Pretty good goals. That's pretty good Magic goals for the year.
Yeah, and I guess for me too is play some paper tournaments, which I said I was going to. I mean, I can say I'm going to, and then I can say last man, I don't feel like going or whatever. So one of my goals is to like definitely lock down to play one or two paper tournaments. And I'm talking about There's an SCG Open in Milwaukee, and there's a GP in Milwaukee. So at least one of them I should play, but my goal should be to play in both of them and be in more gauge to see people in live events. Because I know, like we said, you know, we talk to a lot of people online. There's a lot of people that I love talking about on Twitter and Twitch that I would probably consider friends, but there's a lot of people I still haven't met in real life yet. Nathaniel is one of them. I still haven't met him in real life. So
yeah,
I'm hoping I can check some of those boxes off my Magic Life list. I'm hoping I can go to Roanoke too. I haven't seen the Roanoke crew in a while either. So that's another huge thing I'm hoping to do.
Yeah, hopefully I'll win a GP and then I'll book a ticket to one of these SCGs. I'll come see you.
That would be gas.
Yeah.
All right, anything else?
I just hope that everyone has a great new year. I had this sentiment on my Twitter. A lot of people have watched me stream. A lot of people have listened to me on this. A lot of people have subbed to me on Twitch, even though I'm being a bit inconsistent over the last month since Worlds. And I just have to say, I really appreciate it. And I hope, karma-wise, you get a fantastic new year out of it.
Yep, same. So is it time for Carta After Dark?
Yeah, I think so. I think we got time.
Yes, let's do it.
We're listening in on radio.
Welcome to Card Hunter After Dark. I'll be your MC this evening. I'm Connor. This is the radio station for adult and mature content. And this week's captivating topic is going to be how to host a New Year's party. Dave, I kind of talked about earlier, I've never really had like a good New Year's Eve. Like, I've done the whole like go to parties and go to like drink deals at like bars and stuff like that, but I've never ever had a good New Year's Eve. That one that's like, I'll always remember this. Like, always my New Year's Eves are always just like dead average. I think the way to go is to like host a party at some point, but I need some guidelines of how to have the perfect New Year's Eve party.
This is a pretty mature content this time.
It is.
It's a lot more mature than the ones I come up with. I think number one, and most importantly, is it is absolutely impossible to have a good New Year's when you go out to a club or pub. This is not Agreed. Possible.
I'm too old at this point anyways.
It's crowded. It's busy. People are way too drunk. You know, it's going to be hard to get in and out. So at someone's house, you know, at your own home, I think everyone loves food. You got a platter, nice food laid out for people. You got some junk. You got some stuff you've cooked. I love cooking. Some little finger foods for people, a bit of tapas.
Yeah, yeah. So let's start with that. So like how deep should I go with that? Like, should it just be like some pizzas and some like appetizers, or like should be expanded further than that? Like, how much food should people?
I think it depends on the group. Like, if you have a small group, making like a dinner that everyone can pick up. So making like, if it's just you, your girlfriend, two or three of your closer friends, having something like wraps you can make yourself, or like bigger finger foods is nice. But if you have a lot of your friends over, you know, some chips and dip. If you can't make your own guacamole, please learn how to. It's really simple and it's really delicious. So that, and just a couple little finger foods. You have to see what you're in the mood for to make. You have to decide how sloppy you want people to make. It's really easy to make junky ones. So putting on a few pizzas, making your own little pizzas is really easy. Making nachos, stuff like this is, it sounds like it's a lot of effort, but it isn't. And, you know, people usually appreciate that. There's something people might appreciate a little bit more is copious amounts of alcohol. have some drinks there. And if you're going to someone's party, don't be a dick. Bring some drinks with you. You know, don't expect the host to have everything.
That part I'm not too concerned with. So how big should the party be? So are like, what's your ideal party size? Like, I know this can vary from different person to person, but like, should it just be family, or should it just be like go all out family, friends, or maybe somewhere in the middle, like maybe 8 to 10 people?
I want to say it depends on your family and friends, right? Some people have families they do not want to be inviting to a party.
I would invite some family, maybe.
I would say it depends on the size of the venue you can get. So if your house is big enough, as long as your house is still comfortable for everyone to have a drink and some food in, that's my limit. So I'm in a pretty small place, like more than 5 people, it's packed. If you have more people than you have seats is usually my rule of thumb for a relaxed party. You can go a bit above that, I guess. I'm a big fan of sitting down, O'Connor. Maybe these party questions aren't the best for me. But
that's fine. Because, it will depend on the crowd if there's going to be dancing. I'm fine with a small little dance party. That, of course, depends on the venue. But the other big thing is because, yes, I like to sit as well and enjoy my drink, too. So what kind of activity should there be? Should there be one year we played Cards Against Humanity, which, like, I've had maybe two or three New Year's events with that. And it's fun, but something like one... Sometimes it takes too long, and that's, like, the whole night then. So it kind of, like, distracts people from actually celebrating, and then it's, like, we're just playing this game all night, which is fun. I love playing that game, but then it's, like, oh, we're not, like, having fun and partying, so maybe that's not the best game. So what would you suggest, like, for an activity then, or a game?
I'm a pretty big fan of just talking. Mm-hmm. Like, just if you have your close friends and family there, just having drinks and talking crap all night, that's something I'm into. You know, having some kind of app on your TV where people can just toggle through music. I do really appreciate stuff like that. Cards Against Humanity isn't bad. It depends how nerdy your friends are, certainly games. I do love the idea of just playing a massive board game all night, but that's like a different kind of party,
I've had many of the parties like that, and those are like, they're good, but then it's just like the night's too much about that game. We played Risk one year. A lot of fun, but then it's just like, oh, it's like 3 a.m. We played Risk all night. Oh,
I want to get mega nerdy. I want Twilight Imperium. You got to start okay. at 9 a.m. that morning, and then you maybe will be finished by the time the countdown passes by.
Okay. All right. That's a good final question I have for you. What time should it start? Because my wife's cousin had their party start at 4 o'clock. I'm like, that's way too damn early. But is 9 o'clock too late? What's a good time?
As I said to you before the cast, we're getting a bit old. So, like, Callie was up to the countdown. She had some Prosecco. We did a toast. We had a hug. And then she went to bed.
Yeah, it's an important question because now a lot of my friends have kids, too. So, we're definitely getting to that point. But, like, when's, like, early too early, you know?
I would say it depends how much you want to drink afterwards. You know, usually at these kind of parties or, you know, I would suspect people leave at about between 1 and 3 o'clock latest.
Yeah.
So start at 7 or 8 would be my thing, and then see how far it goes. Maybe a little earlier if you want to make a whole night of it, maybe 6, but any earlier than that seems like a lot. It also gives chance for people to, you know, eat their dinner before they come over, and I always kind of like stuff like that.
Any other big picture suggestions for the ultimate New Year's party?
Consider your neighbors. Don't have karaoke. If you want to have karaoke, leave the house. Don't be...
Yeah, I don't think I would do karaoke, yeah. Yeah, that's a big reason why we don't have parties at our place now is because we live in a condominium. So it's just like, nope, never having a New Year's party here. But if we are to move into a house, which will be in maybe a couple of years, definitely that's on the list of New Year's party. And it's going to be good. I'm going to have a good New Year's one time. I need to go all out. And that's my plan. So I'm already planning for it.
Nice, nice.
Long-term booking, man.
Well, what I'm going to do is when we get a house is I'm going to get a couple of massive dogs. And then my New Year's every year will be the massive dogs in Cali, and that will be all. People are the worst.
Ooh, man, the pet strategy. So that was something you didn't bring up. That's a good strategy.
Yeah.
Some cats. I can do some cats as well. There we go.
I'm a fan of cats.
We broke the format.
You know, it's a little weird? I like Asian cats better than European cats.
Okay, explain.
So, like, if you've ever seen, like, a picture of a cat with, like, a perfectly round face and, like, shorter legs, literally a picturesque animal... That's an Asian cat. They have like the cutest little round faces. And like European cats have like longer faces and longer limbs. I don't know why. It's just how they are.
All right, so man. Whatever.
There you go. Random little fact that means nothing to anyone, but they've noticed.
Yeah. That'll be the next After Dark topic. Which country do you like your pets from?
Yeah.
Whatever.
What dog would you like if you could have any breed of dog?
Oh, I can't choose. Corgis are pretty fun. They're nice and small, but... Right now, the family dog is a German Shepherd, so I would have to invite the German Shepherd.
If I had a small dog, I'm a much bigger fan of big. Like when I get a dog, it's going to be called Waffles. If you can imagine, if you can imagine a big dog called Waffles, you got what kind of dog I want. But if I get a small dog, Corgis are adorable. I want a Newfoundlander. Is my new thing.
Okay.
They're absolutely anything that could be misconstrued as a bear or was trained to hunt bears. That is the type of dog I want.
Excellent strategy. Yeah, unfortunately for like a real party though, pets are like a never good thing to have around just because like, oh, you know, if you drop food, they can eat food. They shouldn't be drinking alcohol either, obviously. So That's like the unfortunate thing about New Year's parties. Like, animals shouldn't be around. Although my cat used to love parties, though.
Yeah.
She used to be great at them.
They get, like, a little stressed out as well. So they're happy, but they don't sleep because there's too many people.
Yeah.
So, like, one of my girlfriend's best friends lives around the corner from us in the family house. In their family house. Their family house is really big, but they have this adorable collie. And it's never, like, stressed out because of a party, but you can tell it should be asleep. But every time it goes to its bed, someone does something and it comes running over to play. Just every time. Or we finally get it, you know, be in a room and then people go out the back garden to smoke. So outside, and she runs outside and tries to play with the toys out there. So yeah, try and have your dogs put away if you're going to have a party, I guess.
Yep. Everybody got that? Good. All right. That's Card Hoarder After Dark for this week. So I think that is going to do it for this episode. So don't forget about upcoming events on Magic Online this week. Of course, Vintage Masters, it's great. You can play it a little bit more, but if you're tired of it, there's definitely more things that you can do. For Premier events, there is a Ixalan Sealed Mox Open on Saturday the 6th and a Modern Mox Monthly on Sunday. So for contacts, hit me up on Twitter at Connor P. O'Donnell. Check out the other podcasts I work on, Game Podcast GAM, with Jerry Thompson and Brian Gottlieb, generally out every Friday on StarCityGames.com. Also, the WCW versus NWO podcast, the wrestling podcast Dave and I do. We review the NWO era of WCW pay-per-view by pay-per-view. Dave, plugs and things.
You can find me on Twitch, hopefully a lot more consistently. I'm Dave C on that. At the moment, doing a bit of modern, but mostly just preparing for Infinite Rivals drafts and a couple on the 15th, I think we said, so pretty soon. And you can catch me on Twitter. It's at DaveC89 this time. And yeah, chat to me about anything we've talked about here. We'd love to hear your opinions on any of the topics.
All right, man. This is the first show that we've just done, you and me, I'm pretty sure. So I thought it went well. We talked a lot longer than I thought we were going to.
Oh, I can rant. I can hit it.
Yeah, I've noticed, man. I thought it was just Nathaniel. No, you're the problem.
Definitely.
Awesome. Well, can't wait to do it next week, as always. So that's going to wrap it up for us this week. Remember, you can find the show every week on cardhoarder.com. Next week, we'll catch up with Nathaniel. But until then, thank you for listening, and we will see you next week.